From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Digital Podcast, the Digipod, as no one calls it. Welcome on in. Today, we've got a wonderful interview with an old friend of mine. Zach Phillips is on the show. Zach is the newly minted, as of this podcast recording, head writer of video at thekicker.com. Broadway Video and Above Average's partner website focused on sports comedy. So we break it down with Zach from start to finish on his approach to writing for sports comedy, which is a niche that he's been writing for years. It's almost as if they built this website for Zach to write at it because it's the perfect place for him. What a wonderful that they found each other in this way. So we break all that down, talk about his process as a writer, a lot of interesting stuff, and a fantastic conversation with an old buddy. Before we get to that, a little update from UCB Comedy. We have been working here for the last 8 months or so on a 6-part docu-comedy series for Fusion and their F Comedy site. And you can find those episodes out now on Fusion's YouTube and Facebook pages. I believe it's YouTube/F Comedy and Facebook/Fusion Comedy. The series is called UCB IRL. And basically, about 9 months ago, we went out to a bunch of our friends, comedians here at UCB, gathered some ideas for social experiments, pranks, documentaries with a comedic bent about real world issues. And what we came back with was 6 episodes that have been really fun to make and really excited that they're out there. They range from all sorts of topics, from racial tokenism to digital detox, Wall Street, and vasectomy. So a few different, I mean, those are very random things, right? It's a really wide range of topics. But it's a really fun series with a lot of great talent. So it was really fun to put together. And that's all out there right now, UCB IRL on Fusion's F Comedy. We hope you can check that out. And we'll probably be talking about that more in the upcoming weeks. All right, to today's episode with Zach Phillips. As I mentioned before, Zach is the head writer of video at thekicker.com, a sports comedy website that is owned by Broadway Video. He's also been a longtime member of, I think Zach has done the UCB trifecta. He's done Maud, Herald, and Digital. He actually, we go back to the first beta teams at UCB where we were on the same team. That's when I first met Zach back in 2010. And I believe he had a short stint where he wasn't on Digital, but is back on a team right now. His new team, Three Thirds, has got a really exciting series that's going to be out in a couple of months towards the end of the year. I'm sure we'll be talking about that as well. Zach, longtime writer, producer. He's done some directing. He does some editing. He's always been a curious filmmaker and comedian, and it's wonderful to sit down and talk to him about his process. So let's jump into it. Our conversation with the head writer of video at The Kicker, Zach Phillips. Really, Zach, this was just an excuse to sit down and get in a room with you because we've been trying to do this for...
I know. I'm so sorry. It's been so long.
It's been life months we've kids. Been trying to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find it, just to talk about your kids for 1 second, do you find it significantly harder to balance everything with 2 than 1?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like with 1, my wife and I would just kind of take turns.
Sure.
Leave it, you know.
But now they outnumber you?
Now they outnumber you if you're home alone.
Right.
And it's not, you know, and also it's not just having 2, but it's also that the first one is older. And
yeah.
So it's like we've reached the point where, like, it counts now.
Right.
Like, when they're a baby, they're not going to remember it anyway. But, like,
sure.
Now it's like I need to be present because it will have an impact if I'm not, you know. So
right.
That... Yeah, it's...
the grace period with that one's over.
Yeah.
But I imagine it's also hard because the little one takes up so much brain space. You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine a toddler and a newborn. I can't imagine that because the newborn took up so much of my time just with 1 that I can't imagine giving them that but also having space for somebody who clearly is high need and, like, wants your attention.
Yeah, it is tough. Although, I mean, I honestly just think we're super lucky because my older daughter is, like, super helpful. And compared to, like, most kids her age, knock on wood, is not jealous of
sure.
her little sister. And she we like really played it up ahead of time that like, hey, you're getting a little sister, you're getting a little baby, you got to help us out. So she feels a little bit like,
well, you're pitching her on the idea of it, so she's on board.
Yeah.
So it's not, she doesn't form an opinion about it that's negative. You're just pitching the positive side first.
Totally. Yeah. I feel like that's so much of parenting is like psychological tricks like that.
Yeah.
Many of which I feel like I learned on the Dog Whisperer.
Mm-hmm.
you know, like, I just feel like so much of that, you know, it's like, yeah.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Or just like redirect. You know, if you can see, like, mm-hmm. We're about to get upset, just like, rather than saying no, just like, oh, look over here. Why don't we play with this?
Yeah.
As you
that's
well
fair.
Know.
Definitely. We could talk about this for an hour, but let's talk about your comedy work. So,
sure.
You've been at The Kicker for how long now?
Maybe 4 or 5 months.
Right. I did an episode at DCM. David came out.
Ingbert,
show.
Oh, cool.
He's great. I had never met him before.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's really fun. So you're over there, first staff writing position, right?
Yeah, and actually we just moved around, so now I'm the head writer for videos there.
I see.
This is above average's sports site.
Yes.
Should people not
TheKicker.com.
Yeah.
TheKicker.com.
Yeah,
so you're the head writer for videos.
Yeah.
So it's starting to segment off. Because I know that it's been expanding pretty significantly,
mm-hmm.
right? And you guys just got some new capital investment, which is great.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's good.
But so now what were you doing before? When you first started, you were doing articles too? Or what was
the
difference?
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's like we did both Above Average and The Kicker have like articles, daily articles on the website, kind of like a Feed the Beast kind of thing. On the sports side, it was very topical, just like, you know, comedic articles based on whatever's in the news. You know, today it's Ryan Lochte, whatever. And then also videos. So I was kind of doing both
of those things.
Yeah.
And now is it that there's enough video work to be done that you're focusing on it? Or what's the sort of like reason for the change?
I think it is expanding. So there's like a lot of work. And I think the idea is just to kind of like focus people. Cause sometimes it's better if you're not juggling a million things at once and you're just kind of like.
I can imagine that.
Yeah.
I can see that. I don't know what that feels like, I can see that.
Yeah. So I think it was kind of like a, just simplify and focus kind of thing as well. But
I mean, you are very even keeled, but you like it over there? You like it?
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, it's to have a full-time comedy writing job. It's great.
Because here's the thing, and this is where I'm going to pitch the sort of like premise of this discussion.
Sure, yeah.
And that is that I feel like you sort of, that this job is a really incredible fit for you because you as a comedy writer and somebody we go back now, what, like 6-7 years working together.
Yeah, 2009 maybe.
Yeah. And even since those early days, you've been doing sports comedy since then. And so much of it, like we've done what? Several series that are sports comedy just independently, right?
Totally.
Either for our old UCB beta team or independent
us,
stuff, whatever. But it feels like there was never really a market for those two things. This job comes along, this site comes along, and it's a great fit that they're able to sort of, you know, snatch you up and you're able to sort of get in there at that place. You sort of had the body of work already.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny how those things work out. Like I'm a sports fan, so as are you. So I would write comedy about sports more than most people because I think most people in the comedy community don't like sports. And I never.
I mean, I think that's somewhat true. I think it's. There's some.
Sure. Yeah. But. I don't know. I feel like I've been going to like Super Bowl parties for years in the UCB community, and most people there are like, not that. But anyway,
that's true. It's way more of a, as far as like culture stuff goes, it definitely trends towards the sort of like nerd culture stuff more than the sort of like sports culture stuff.
Yeah.
On a whole.
Totally. So I don't know. I feel like at some point I never felt like, oh, this is, if I just focus on sports, I'll get a job.
Yeah.
But I felt like, it might not be bad to, because I always feel like, why would, there's so many funny people. Yeah. I always look at the people that I admire and I think, like, why would somebody hire me when there are all these other people that are so funny that I look up to? And we're all the same. We're all, like, writing the same kind of sketches, doing the same kind of improv scenes. So I guess I just had the thought at some point, like, couldn't hurt to, like, the fact that I love sports mm-hmm. and I like writing sports comedy, couldn't hurt to lean into that a little bit. And then it actually started with, like, The Onion. I was on, like, an Onion sports show. Oh. I had this thought that I would just start trying to write Onion sports headlines.
Yeah. Just before you even had the gig.
This is way, way before, way back. I didn't have any real reason other than the fact that I liked their sports section. I thought that maybe I could do it. Mm-hmm. And I actually, like, I don't know if this is too granular, but I started doing this thing where I was just like, I'm just going to work on this for 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Every single day. Because if you go longer than 10 minutes, then that's the kind of thing that, like, if you can make excuses and say, well, I'm too busy today, I don't have time. But you always have 10 minutes. So I just started writing Onion sports headlines for 10 minutes a day, every day. And at first, I would write for 10 minutes and have nothing, because it's not easy to do if you don't know how to write jokes.
Yeah.
But eventually I got better and happened to, at that point I had a friend who was at The Onion.
Yeah.
And so I just asked him, like, hey, if someone like me wanted to submit to, apply to write sports headlines, how would one do that? And he was like, well, I could help you, but let's look at your headlines. And he, I gave him like the best 20 that I have, like the hundreds I had written. And he was basically like, all but three or four of these aren't good enough. So went back to the drawing board, wrote another few hundred, eventually, like, had, 15 decent ones. And just at that time, again, this is all just, I had no plan. It was just kind of like, seemed like a prudent thing to do. It just so happened at that time that they were staffing up this new web show called Get Out of My Face, a parody of sports chat shows like Pardon the Interruption. And so it just happened to be that I had submitted at that exact time, and so I got to submit a packet, and I got on that show. And then that ended, and nothing happened for a long time. But eventually I was interviewing for, like, a different job at Above Average, and in the interview I mentioned, like, we're just talking, I mentioned that I like sports, and then that spurred this conversation of, like, we're actually thinking of creating a sports site, so we'll keep you in mind. It was sort of like, so it was a, from my perspective, it was an incredibly long process that didn't pay off for a very long time. But yeah, then when eventually the site was up and they wanted a writer, I had been contributing there for like half a year, but
Were there and were in the position to do it.
Yeah.
Because you could say, okay, maybe it's a slow process, or maybe it's something that's like, oh, it just happened to work out. But it also is that those sound like conscious decisions to say, I'm going to lean into this because it's my taste. I'm going to develop this skill, so that I have this material. I'm going to leverage this material and sort of like, see what opportunities it can create for me. And then you're in the right place at the right time. You don't happen to.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's funny.
It's not like you're singing on a street corner and a record executive walks by.
Right.
You are you're practicing and developing and writing and putting yourself in those positions.
You know what it is? You just sort of crystallized it for me. You're right. The thing that I left out of that story is that also during that time, I was doing a million other things too. So it all seems so clear and consequential or the sequence is so clear in retrospect that, like, oh, this led to this. But at the time, it didn't feel like that. At the time, I had obviously no idea that it would lead anywhere. As you said, it was like The Onion had put up a sports show on Comedy Central. It was canceled. Comedy Central did another sports show with Norm Macdonald. It was canceled. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't seem like there was really a market for it. So for all I knew, I was barking up the totally wrong tree. And I was still doing, you know, Maude and Beta, and I was trying to write political sketches because there were political talk, late night shows in town. So I thought maybe that would be, you know, so I, at the time, I just wasn't sure. And I was doing a lot of other stuff as well, and I had doubts. But in retrospect,
sure,
it was, you know what I mean?
It is interesting how much, how many, because there are quite a few sort of like sports comedy ventures that haven't worked out. And yet there's such a link. Like, I mean, SportsCenter's been doing, has had a comedic bent to it for 20 years now,
yeah.
Like 25 years.
Totally.
And it's such an ingrained part of, you know, like those SportsCenter ads, like think about how long that ad campaign has
been going.
And those continue to be like, even new ones that they come out with, they're still funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
So there's definitely like a market there and a link between these worlds. Yeah, and it's interesting to sort of like see how many of those places have done it and not necessarily gotten it, found that audience for it.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know. I would love to know what the people on those shows thought. You know, maybe it was just a bad timing thing.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe it is like finding the right audience. I feel like a tricky thing with sports comedy is like with like something like UCB, it appeals to a very specific demo of like somewhat, you know, comedy nerds essentially, like good smart comedy, sometimes dark.
Yeah.
With sports, I think sometimes people aren't sure, like, wait, are we appealing to comedy fans who happen to like sports, or are we appealing to sports fans who maybe haven't ever taken an improv or sketch class and don't watch
And you kind of have to make that decision.
Yeah.
Those are two kind of separate audiences. It also seems like sports is hard because sports, when it operates in a fake landscape, those sports fans don't really care about it. You know what I mean? And like the reason why I think a lot of that SportsCenter stuff works is because there are real sports
athletes.
Figures. Yeah, real athletes involved with it. But in order to get those leagues at that level involved, you have to have special kind of access or a lot of money, or you have to be sort of offering them something because they don't undervalue their product, man. They definitely know what they're worth.
Yeah,
you know?
They make it very difficult. Yeah, it's true. You know, because we did... It's also like you can, if you're doing a sketch about like a boardroom, like you can find someone who looks like a boss.
Right.
Really hard to find someone that like genuinely looks like an NBA player.
Sure.
You know, or a football player. It's like, it just looks fake. And
it's a specific body type even, right? And somebody who has to, and if you're referencing someone specific, they also, there's no substitute.
You know? Yeah.
There's no substitute for LeBron James. You know what I mean?
Right. As opposed to, it's a lot easier to see a sketch about like Steve Jobs with an actor. I don't know. You can just suspend disbelief easier.
A little bit more. Yeah. And you're more willing to. Yeah. And I also think that that's not necessarily targeting. Like maybe if there was a huge business comedy community in the business world, that they wouldn't. They'd be like, that doesn't look like Steve Jobs. That's not what a boardroom is like.
Totally.
But sports fans, you know what I mean?
That'd be fun. Yeah, Wall Street. UCB should open up like a Wall
Street. UCB Wall Street?
Yeah.
I think it would do very well. You could probably charge more than $5 for tickets. That's for sure.
Yeah,
man. Were you a fan? Do you remember Sports Night? You ever watched that? I remember.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Sorkin.
Oh.
I loved it.
I loved it. Because you also have a little Sorkin and like sort of strain in your... The thing I always used to say,
long-winded.
Yeah, when we used to do a lot of stuff together, I remember we talked about this once. We're saying like a lot of times it's characters who are speaking in a way that is like your writing. A lot of times was characters speaking in a way that was like smarter than what their actual station in life was.
Sure, yeah,
which is what Sorkin does. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter who Sorkin's characters are.
Yeah.
They're all fucking.
They're all
brilliant,
smartest,
eloquent,
yeah,
you know, monologists.
Totally. Yeah, I try to. I definitely have that strain. I try to get better at that. Like, this is one of those things where, like, I think teaching sketch has really been beneficial to me because you read all these other people's sketches and you kind of see the things that you do. And I like, one of the big things I tell students is, like, you don't even need to read the words. You can just hold up the script away from your face. And if there's a block of text that is, like, more than, like, an inch or two, that's too much, unless it's, like, the big speech at the end of the sketch. You know? Because, you know, if you watch, like, commercials or shows or trailers or whatever, it's always, like, a line. You know, it's like a quick sentence. Nobody talks in these big long chunks. So I've actually been trying to cut against that. I've been trying to get better about, like, very, very short, terse, concise statements. But, yeah, I guess that is kind of something that I gravitate towards is, like, I don't know. I don't really like the term smart comedy, but I guess higher brow. I don't like, like bathroom humor. I don't really like it. Totally cool for other people to like it. It just does nothing for me. I never am like excited to write a sketch about that. I don't know. It's like, sometimes I think that it's good if someone's reading your sketch and they're like, oh yeah, I can feel Zach in there. And sometimes I feel like that's bad. Like I should
be able to
present.
Sort of fall away into the work a little bit more.
I guess it depends on what kind of thing you're doing.
I can dig that, and what the sort of purpose of the piece is too.
Let me
ask you this. In your approach now when you're doing this job at the Kicker, right? So you're looking for humor, and now specifically targeted at video, right? That can be produced for this site and in the voice of this site. And David sort of mentioned some of this on a previous episode here about like the intentions of the site to not necessarily be negative, to want to make jokes that you'd make if that person was in the room with you. I remember him saying something to that extent. But what I wonder is, like, your approach as a consumer of this culture too. Do you feel like you're like, now you're kind of like in a position where you need to be watching, right? Are you watching more sport? Like, what's your consumption pattern to give you enough access to the world to find material on a daily basis for your job?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky. I mean, when we're recording this is during the Olympics, and we've been doing like a daily video on the Olympics every day. So, you know, been watching a lot of the Olympics. But it's, you know, I think a lot of it is, the weird thing about sports is that a lot of it is about these like weird scandals and media narratives. Like nobody's gonna want a joke that's like, okay, let's see, the Chiefs came back in the second half yesterday. Can we make a joke about that? Like, it's always about personalities in the same way that pop culture, political humor usually is. You know, it's about Trump and Kardashian, you know, because that's what people know. So I think a lot of what we do, I think, is media criticism in a weird way. It's just like playing off of these weird narratives that come up, you know, like.
So when you're looking at the Olympics specifically, you're looking as much at the sort of like media coverage as at the actual sporting events themselves for the comedic fodder.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, although the Olympics is kind of a rare case where it's just so whimsical and quirky. There are all these weird sports and weird athletes from around the world with weird stories, you know, so there's a lot to, it's the one time where we sort of do get a little granular or make like a joke about rowing or something, you know.
Well, also because it's not going to be an evergreen thing. It's like the Rio Olympics are specific, whereas every Major League Baseball team plays 162 games every single summer.
Right. And we're all on the same page. Like, nobody is a big rowing fan, you know, but so we're all operating with the same level of expertise on most of this stuff.
Which we're all experts. For these 2 weeks, we are experts.
Exactly. That's my thing. Every 4 years, suddenly everyone knows exactly what constitutes a good dive versus a bad dive.
They know everything about it.
Yeah. It's so annoying. Although I feel like NBC is not doing a good job of telling us what we need to be what we need to know to understand it
Can
better,
I tell but. You, I've been watching some of the coverage on, like, the Apple TV and the NBC app, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And during the day, when it live streams, there will be no commentary at all, right? It's just the raw coverage certain circumstances. And when it's a busy event, it makes no sense what's happening. You have no context of anything.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I know that I remember one time, I think back in the 80s or 90s, NBC or some TV network experimented with a NFL game with no announcers. Do you remember this?
I feel like I've heard of that.
It because you think, like, these guys are such idiots. They say, everyone loves to make fun of, like, what they every mistake they make, and they say something obvious like, "We're not going to win if to win these guys got to score more points or something." But then you take the announcers away, and it is a little just dead and confusing. But so yeah, I mean, I think we try to. I think media is a fun area for us to explore, just because that's. I mean, I think a lot of comedy is, like, exposing, God, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but exposing hypocrisy. it's like exposing truths, exposing hypocrisy. So I think there's a lot of that in, like, the media narratives, the way the media covers stuff or makes something into a scandal that shouldn't be.
Well, it's about being skeptical with a perspective, right?
Yeah.
And if you're skeptical without that comedic perspective, it just is negative.
Right. It's just negativity.
Whereas what you really primed to look for in your comedy training is, like, that's weird.
Yeah.
And let's
explore
that. How
can we have fun with that?
Yeah. Let's explore what's fun about that weird thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's to skewer it, and sometimes it's to celebrate it if it's something that deserves that, right?
Totally. And it's interesting because I feel like I find it a little bit easier to do that with sports than with politics. You know, with politics, which I follow very closely too, it just makes me so angry.
Well, because there's consequences to
there's
politics.
There's major consequences.
Yeah. There's real things that happen there. Exactly. Sports is just, it has value and it has cultural importance and blah, 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 blah. But it's not.
At the end of the day, it's
not the same.
Yeah. And it's also like, this is the thing, I'm always like trying to figure out the way to explain to non-sports fans why I'm a sports fan, because it is irrational. It makes no sense to be. It doesn't affect me whether the Reds win or lose.
But it's storytelling, though. There's a story to everything about it. Like, there is a narrative to every single baseball game that's unique to it.
And I think, too, it's like, it's the one area where, like, there's like a purity to the fact that, like, I mean, there's all this noise. Yeah. There's all this talk of, like, who's better. If Steph Curry is going to have to step up in this game, he's going to have to be clutch. But at the end of the day, they play the game, and whoever scores the most points wins. And there's no debate about that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the only place in life that I feel like you have that. Like, you know, the Oscars are voted on by, like, a panel. There's politics, you know, and even the election, like, the election's the other closest thing, in that, like, at the end of the day, it's whoever gets the most votes, but that
who
is
gets
subject to
the most electoral college votes.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, of course, it's rigged, as we all know. So
sure, we all know that.
Yeah. But, yeah, so there is, like, a finality and a purity to it, but I don't know. I always struggle to explain to non-sports fans why it's not crazy to be screaming at the TV when the Reds have given up another ninth inning lead.
I can dig it. I mean, what's your just to go back to this? What's your consumption habit? Do you watch sports?
Sorry,
do you
I never
watch,
answered
do you watch
your
the
question.
Games themselves?
I did a very bad job of answering your question. You know, I don't, because of the two kids. I just don't have time to watch the games usually. So, a lot of, and I don't think many people watch sports or anymore because, you know, you can just get the news instantaneously on Twitter or whatever. So I tend to just, like, read blogs, Deadspin, which I guess will be owned by Univision now. You know, like SB Nation and ESPN. Which is filtered, so I'm getting it through someone else's.
But again, but you're looking for stuff where there are narratives happening to look for comedic premise or comedic ideas off of that storytelling that other people are already doing.
Totally.
You're also not doing parody of sports media. You're doing
no.
actual comedy content as relates to sports stories.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of sketches. It's not like a parody of SportsCenter or something. Yeah, I just think there's more to that just seems to be the easiest place to get stuff is like what people are talking about. You know, it's like, yeah, it's just like what strikes me as unusual or compelling or interesting, not even necessarily funny,
yeah,
but just like what is weird to me about this discussion of like Ryan Lochte and the whole fake robbery thing. You know, sure. It's just like.
Which will have been totally resolved by the time this podcast comes
out. I'm sure no one will even remember Ryan Lochte by that point. Actually, I think he's forever tainted by this.
But. We're very dating this episode of the podcast. We're mentioning the Olympics. You mentioned Gawker being we're going
to
be able to tell when we
recorded my wife this morning. It's August 18th, and
you woke up and said, "Honey, it's August 18th, 2016."
Yeah, sorry, we can edit all that out.
So you're looking for this stuff through those blogs mostly.
Yeah.
And maybe some highlights once in a while.
Yeah, and I think, you know,
has it made you follow other teams other than your teams? Has it been more encouraging to do that? Or
a little bit. A little. You know, the weird thing is with baseball, it's just, it's such a regional sport now. Like, it seems like what people are into, like, our baseball stuff doesn't do that great compared to NBA and NFL, which are, you know, huge. Like, everybody cares about the Warriors and the Thunder. Yeah, I think, I watch a little bit more of the NBA playoffs than I probably would have. It's made me more interested because I'm following it more. But I think, too, like, you know, the other thing I forgot, the other place that ideas come from is just from, like, talking to people about stuff. And I used to not realize like how much, I don't know, it's weird. It doesn't make sense that like why something would come out of a conversation that you couldn't have yourself, but it's just something about, you know, like an improv scene.
Sure.
It ends up in a place that you could never have gotten to on your own just by like, you know, listening and reacting to each other. So I think that's another big place is just like talking through stuff with other people, not even necessarily like trying to get ideas, but it just,
but just sort
stuff
of having
comes out of
conversations.
That.
Yeah, yeah, I mean that also makes sense because you're sort of like exploring what's interesting to you about that story.
Totally, yeah. Totally, without the pressure of like, okay, oh God, Ryan Lochte, what's funny about this? What's funny? What's funny? What's funny?
There's a lot that's funny about that.
Yeah, but I think it's also like, I think. It's also somewhat of a skill that can be improved with practice, you know? And, like, I think the other, like, serendipitous thing for me was that, like, I had spent all these years, being a contributor to The Onion, which means that you send in, like, 20 headlines every week or whatever.
Yeah, you're on your own, and you're sending that
totally
stuff
on your own. They're in Chicago.
Digitally.
Yeah, you just email them in. And it's very hard to get in to The Onion because they have very high standards, and there's no, you know, it's a little bit, it can be a little bit frustrating because, you know, my deadline was always like Monday morning, so I would just be up Sunday night, 4 or 5 a.m., just writing as many headlines as I could so I could, like, pick the best 15 or 20. But I think that doing that for a long time, I just got better at the skill of, like, you know, very quickly coming up with a take or a joke on something that works. And I think it's like in sports, just shooting 1,000 free throws is the way to get good at free throw shooting. So I think that's the other thing, is just like pitching a ton of things and just writing a ton of jokes is really the way you get better at doing it, in my experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. What do you? How
that was a lot of vocal fry I just put on that.
How do you guys approach this sort of like process inside the job? How much you like? Is it a daily meeting or is it a when you're idea generating at the job? Is it daily? Is it weekly? What's the frequency?
Well,
you guys are sort of like trying to develop new ideas because these stories move so fast.
Yeah, they do. It's funny because we're in this transit. Like, I just got this new position. So we're in a transition stage, and I don't know. We may be changing things. But now, you know, what we usually do is we just will email each other ideas in the morning, you know, and then that's just based on what happened last night. You know, we'll email each other a bunch of, like, headlines or ideas. That's mostly for, like, articles. And then we'll have, like, a G-chat window open all day. So if something happens or whatever, we'll just kind of pitch ideas all day. And it's kind of cool because it's just, like, you'll pitch an idea and, you know, you learn to develop thick skin, you know. So you pitch an idea and people... If it's not good, people might just not respond to it. But like the point is that you're continuing to pitch, so you're not going to like argue with like why doesn't anyone like this idea? The fact that nobody likes it says it doesn't make sense, or it's not clear, it's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
So you just move on. So you know, but like when you do pitch an idea that people like, you know, everybody jumps on like that's great, write it. Yeah, for videos we tend to meet like. Once a week,
mm-hmm.
Is what we were doing before. And we have different meetings. Like one is just to sort of like generate ideas, which it might be, you know, hey, something's coming up this week, like the Olympics, like we need some ideas for that. Or it might be, hey, we want to get ahead. Like, you know, the NFL season is starting in a month.
Yeah.
Is there something we can do now? And then we also will have, like, table reads or just general pitch meetings where people can bring in pitches that they have developed. So there's, like, a distinction between a meeting where, like, you're not supposed to have brought anything in. We're just going to, like, bat things around and see what we come up with as a group versus, like, let's go over some pitches that you sat down and spent some time on. I think both of those avenues are useful.
Yeah,
you kind of get different ideas, you know, mm-hmm. each way.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because I also think that something that is, you know, interesting about that's come up here is sort of like you sort of forcing yourself to sit down and develop this skill.
Mm-hmm.
It also, like from my experience in working with you, you're somebody who has a lot of good habits when it comes to writing.
Oh, thanks.
So I guess like as a writer and as a developing writer, what are some of those like the ways that you sort of practice that discipline, self-discipline
mm-hmm.
of putting yourself in the position to be generating material on a regular basis? How do you approach it as a writer?
Yeah. Well, I think like one thing that was – I think that was sort of the biggest thing that I got out of being on UCB teams, like a beta team with you and, you know, mod teams and – which is a stage sketch team for people that aren't aware, is just that there is that external expectation. You're basically supposed to be bringing in new material every week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that putting yourself in some kind of situation where, you know, if even if you're, you know, just in a writing group or if you're writing, like, say, a pilot by yourself, just getting a friend to be like, hey, I'm gonna send this to you in a week. You know, just setting up some kind of external deadline pressure,
yeah.
There's no substitute for that. Like, there is no one who, like, the best athletes in the world have personal trainers, you know, because you work harder with someone else pushing you than
sure.
you do all alone. So I think that's a big thing is just setting up some kind of context where external pressure forces you to just generate new material every week. And I think like, and then the nice thing about that is like the more you do it, the less precious you get. And so
sure.
you're not trying to continually make this one sketch work. It's just like, you know what, I'm going to let this go. And, cause I got plenty of other things to work on.
Yeah.
I think, so another thing that I do is, I like write down every idea or half idea or observation I have in my notebook, which is for me is a digital notebook. I use Evernote, but that way I feel like the more you're writing that stuff down, the more that it just trains your brain to like look for those things or notice them.
Sure.
And a lot of times I find that like I'll write an idea down, I think it's great, and then I look at it the next day and it's not, and the opposite. I write something down, I think it's terrible, and I see it the next day and actually think it's like kind of funny. Yeah. So I think
it's having that stuff down that allows you to evaluate it.
Totally. And then you can go back later. Yeah, totally. And you can, in Evernote, you can like tag stuff. So it's like, this is a character, you know? And so then later, if you're in a situation where you like, you know, this could really use just like a good character game, you can kind of look at, hey, what did I write anything down like that?
Sure.
So I think like setting up that deadline pressure. The other thing I do is like I try to revise like very, very aggressively. And I mean, this is something that I had to learn to do. But what I do is like every time I open up a document, I just create a new copy of it, you know. So if it's like Ryan Lochte's sketch, you know, if I wrote a version of it this morning and I'm opening it up now, I'd save it as a new, like a Ryan Lochte sketch 2 or B or whatever. Just so as a psychological trick to like give myself permission to make wild changes, because in my mind it's like, well, I have that old version, so I can go back to that. Why don't we just for shits and giggles try something totally different? Because it's just really, you got to kill your darlings, but it's hard. You spend time coming up with something you think it's like good, or there's something there, and just like doing that allows me to just be like, okay, so I'm going to cut all this stuff. Just, you know, I still have it on that other draft.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing. So then I'm like, by the time other people see it, I've done like 5 or 6 or 7 drafts.
Sure.
Try to make it as tight as possible and clear, and you know. Those are
a couple of ways to do it.
Yeah.
How do you? And let me just ask you this, because this comes back to the sort of beginning of this conversation. You're also a guy with a family now, and I get it. Some of it right now is about you're doing this stuff, and you're doing it for work. You're doing it at work, but this is also a 24-hour-a-day job in a way, right? Mm-hmm. You're never off.
Right.
It's just about accessing your brain and accessing stuff. And you're also doing a lot of stuff for yourself outside of it. As a writer, even to sort of sit down and do this stuff, how are you making space? And maybe this is less now, but when you weren't on a staff job and you're doing this stuff without a clear reason to.
Yeah.
How are you making space in life to do that, to sort of be as prolific without that? You know what I mean? You're talking about creating external goals, you know, your deadlines. Great. But like some of it also just comes back to like, you know,
personal discipline.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was talking about that with someone today. Like, you kind of just have to like suspend disbelief and trick yourself, because I think that was what you just described was by far the hardest part of it for me, is like I would have these moments where I would, you know, look down at the tightrope and just think like, what is this gonna work? Is this amounting to anything? Like, I have no guarantees here. It's not like, you know, you go to med school or law school or some kind of grad school, which, you know, is very, very difficult for other reasons, but there's at least a structure there that, like, there's some sort of expectation that, like, if you get good grades, you'll have some sort of job opportunity afterwards.
And it becomes clearer to point to it. I have this degree that says that I'm certified in this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we don't have that, and that was, like, the toughest part of it.
In fact, nobody's asking you to do it. There's no one in this business who's saying, please, come and write comedy.
I have acute case of needing a joke about
please.
Ryan Lochte.
Yeah.
I got to stop saying Ryan Lochte. It's so dating.
No one's going to care. By the time
please, that. Come. It's August 18th, and we need a joke about Ryan Lochte. That was the thing I struggled with the most. And I think I would just kind of suspend disbelief and just... I was always the kid that did his homework. So I just kind of created, I mean, I didn't think of it this way, but I was essentially like creating a little like syllabus for myself of like, okay, I have to write this, and then I have to write this, and then I have to write that. Just, you know, things that I wanted to do or I thought would be useful or good or funny to do. And then I just sort of like, just did it because it felt like why I have to, you know, it's like my homework. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was the
Are you in your personal sort of like writing? Are you a late night guy? Are you a morning guy? Like, you got to fit it in at some point now, right?
Yeah.
And generally, it's during the hours when your kids are not.
Yeah, exactly. So it has to be like, I've always been a late night guy. So
late night.
It's like after the kids are asleep. The other thing with kids is like, you can be pretty sure that they're going to at least. When they're the age that my kids are at, you can be pretty sure once they go to sleep that they're going to still be asleep at midnight.
Sure.
But like, you can't be sure they'll be asleep at 6 a.m. or that's 5 a.m. You know, they could wake up whenever.
Yep.
But I think that's, I don't know, it's kind of a weirdly nice thing about having kids with respect to the stuff we're talking about, which is it just kind of clarifies stuff, you know, like I'm very bad at saying no to things, and like, I'm bad about loading up my plate with too much stuff.
Yeah.
And it just makes it much easier because it's just so clear. Sure. I have no time to do anything.
It also makes you value your time more.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, look, if I have an hour here to write, I gotta get it done. I'm not gonna like, I'm not gonna like look at the internet or something because this is the only time I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah,
you've always been a late night guy, though. Even before kids, you were writing late at night.
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
You remember you remember those meetings we had when our team first started? We used to meet until like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
the old training center.
Totally,
it's insane to think about that.
We were in like the chill out room.
Oh yeah, we used to do that
like,
too. Yeah,
in the
middle of the night,
Chelsea. Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah, some people hated that. Which is totally understandable.
Totally understandable.
I don't know. For some reason,
I definitely have fond memories of it. I remember at the time being like, wow, this is crazy. I'm exhausted. But also, like, it was something
fun
about that.
I think that's what.
Fun about the time when it's like, and nothing else is happening. You can let loose with it. You're like, this is all I've got to think about.
There's
now.
No distractions. Nobody's emailing you about, like, hey, can you pick up milk or whatever? Mm-hmm. Am I being high energy enough?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Like I said at the beginning of this, you're a very even-keeled guy.
Low, yeah.
But you also have a lot of passion for this stuff.
I do, yeah.
And then the last thing I just want to sort of like direct this towards is that like there also was an element of your background that was journalism too, right? When I first met you were a journalist.
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you think that journalism background has helped you in terms of applying some of the diligence required to be a good journalist and being a good comedy writer? Because they're both about being meticulous in a way.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, yeah, I was a journalist for like 8 or 9 years in D.C. at first, covering Homeland Security and among other, and Congress and local politics and stuff. And I think the big things, I had sort of like a system for like diligence or personal discipline kind of set up. Cause that's what when you're like a daily reporter, you just have to have a story. Like you can't just be like, hey, editor, my story fell through, or I don't really have anything to write about today. Like, it's your job to have a story. And so one of the ways that I learned to do that was I would, you know, especially when you're a reporter, there's a huge influx of information. PR people are sending you stuff, and, like, the governor is putting out press releases and all this stuff. And you need, like, a system to manage that so that, like, so that's where I started, like, figuring out the importance of like organizing the information I was taking in so that like I could use it later. But I think also it's just that idea of like you have to have a story at the end of the day is the same as like, well, it's time for my writer's meeting. I have to have a sketch. It's not an option to like show up without one. But also I think what was the other part of it I was just thinking of?
No, this is also what happens when you have kids, right?
God, brain, my brain is mush.
That's the reason why you have to take advantage of your time, because it may not be there.
It may not be there.
The thought may not be there in a little bit.
Yeah. You know what it is? Here's what it is. Is like, this is, I think, one, the most useful thing I got out of journalism is, like, in journalism, at least in the jobs I had, you write a story and you send it to your editor and he or she sends it back to you. And they don't say, like, hey, great job with this story. I love a lot of the stuff you did. I'm just thinking maybe we could make this second paragraph a little tighter, and maybe we could cut, and maybe we could get a little bit more information from like another story. They don't sugarcoat it. It's just like, you know, red notes on the paper, change this, cut this, another source, and you can just assume the rest of it is fine. And so I think that is a really useful framework, because I feel like with like comedy writing and stuff, people sometimes will get notes and they'll get defensive and they'll like argue, like, or they'll be upset if there's not enough like positive reinforcement, you know. And I think you just do yourself a disservice if you're not like aggressively implementing notes. So I think that sort of being used to that kind of system made me better able to just handle notes and not be as precious. I still was like precious, but not as precious about like, no, it has to be the way I wrote it. And also the other thing is like, clarity is the key in journalism, you know, and the longer I did it, the better I got at like, my job is not to convince people that I am an eloquent, smart writer and use big words that will just take people out of the article and confuse some people, like that, which I would do when I was younger because I wanted to show everyone how smart I was. No, your job is to take complex topics and render them in prose that conveys it very clearly to someone that doesn't know anything about that topic. And I think that translates to comedy too. It's like, don't use a 10-cent word in your sketch or your scene when, you know, don't say apprehensive when you could say worried. Because it's just like it
doesn't get you anything more.
Doesn't get you anything. Right. In fact, it loses you.
Unless
clarity.
For some reason, apprehensive is funnier in the context of the sketch.
Right, like the August 18th Ryan Lochte thing, you know, where he was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, man, I can dig that. And it also seems like, to come back to the kicker too, that there's a journalistic element to what you guys are doing. It's not journalism in a traditional journalism sense, but you are saying, what's the story of the day? What's my comedic take on it?
Yeah.
In the same way that somebody at a newspaper might be, what's the sort of journalistic take? Or an opinion writer would say, what's my political take?
Yeah, and take you have to have multiple takes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, we've already done this story about Trump. Already done, you know, we've already done this
story about Ryan Lochte. Right. A new take on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is kind of
and there is that, right? If you, like, yeah. How many more Michael Phelps things can exist in the world?
Yeah.
But inevitably, you're going to be asked to do another Michael Phelps thing. You have to find that fresh take on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that, again, is that, like, just comes from practice. But that's, that's really tough. Something that, especially now with the proliferation of comedy and all these different venues, whether it's like blogs or websites or Twitter, like the 1,000 late night shows, everyone, it's kind of a nice challenge in a way, because the low hanging joke has been hit. You know, like because I was watching this stuff so closely, when Michael Phelps did his like death stare thing, you know, I mean, it was just like everyone made the same joke, which is like he looks like the Sith Lord.
Sure.
Star Wars.
I mean, he did.
He did. But everyone made that joke. And so it's like, it's actually it's a nice way of like pointing out to people like, okay, so this is not a good joke. If everyone's making it, it's not a good joke.
Right.
And it's a nice challenge to be like, okay, we got to come up with something really different. We can't just, hit the low hanging fruit.
Sure. But I mean, and that also seems different than how other places might approach it, because other places might say, let's hit the low-hanging fruit, but hit it first. Or let's hit it the loudest.
Yeah.
Or let's hit it, you know, the most.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
True. I mean, and we've done that sometimes. but you really have to be first.
Right.
You know,
which is harder and harder to be.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
No, definitely. All right. Last question. Did it hurt more that the Reds traded Aroldis Chapman, or does it hurt more that he's back in the division with the Cubs? Which is worse?
Definitely the second one, because for people that don't care, my favorite team is the Cincinnati Reds. We have this Cuban pitcher named Aroldis Chapman, I still am not over it. Fastest pitcher in all Major League Baseball. We traded him this offseason for nothing to the Yankees.
Really, and then, for nothing?
And then the Yankees turned around and traded him like a few months later and got a better return than we did. And the Cubs are getting less Aroldis Chapman than the Yankees did. So it just was, you could not have a clearer demonstration that our front office messed up.
So the second trade is worse. So having him come back and play for the enemy is worse than losing him.
I mean, and it doesn't matter. Like, we're going for a draft pick this year, so I don't particularly care about this year. But, yeah, way worse.
Okay.
It's a sad time to be a Reds fan. Right. You wouldn't know anything about this.
Wouldn't know anything about it. We're half a game out, Reds, of August 18th, of first place. So, you know, feeling pretty good.
Yeah. No, I'm saying you wouldn't know anything about long periods of futility in a baseball team.
You know what? It's been so long, I've forgotten what it feels like.
Do people know that you're a Red Sox fan?
No, probably not. But it's been 12 years that we've just been winners. You know what I mean? Ever since 2000, it's been great in the Boston area generally.
Yeah. You guys...
It's been wonderful.
It's incredible.
Every couple of years or something.
Bruins, Celtics, Sox, and Patriots.
That's right. Tom Brady. Yeah. All right. Well, now we've given the people everything they want, Zach. Thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it. Nice to sit down with you. It's been too long.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. And that'll do it for episode number 33 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks, y'all, for tuning in. Thanks to Zach for sitting down. Wonderful to catch up with him. Zach wanted me to note that it was very late at night, though I thought he was very eloquent for late at night. As a dad, you never know what time it is anyway. Also, if you noticed, we recorded this during the Olympics. I don't know if that was clear, but Ryan Lochte's story is still going strong here on September the 13th, as it is right now as we're recording this. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you like this show and it adds value to your work, we hope that you will give us a subscription on iTunes, a review, a rating, anything you want. We'd love to hear from you. Love that feedback from you. You can also follow us on Facebook at UCB Digital Podcast and on Twitter at UCB Digital. There's new videos coming out all the time on UCB Comedy's Facebook, YouTube, and Vimeo pages /UCB Comedy. And you can follow UCB Comedy on all forms of social media at UCB Comedy. And until next time, y'all, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.